Have you noticed that we live in a very proud and a very egotistical generation? Today, it is considered acceptable and normal for people to promote themselves, to praise themselves, and to put themselves first. Pride is considered to many to be a virtue. Humility, on the other hand, is considered to be a weakness. It seems everyone is screaming for his or her own rights, seeking to be recognized as someone who is important. There seems to be a huge preoccupation with self-esteem, self-love, self-glorification, and self-gratification that is destroying the very foundation and the very fiber of our society. No culture anywhere can survive pride that has run rampant, for all of society depends on relationships, good relationships with others. When everyone is committed first and foremost to themselves, relationships falter, and eventually they fall apart and they die. Do you see this happening in the world on a large scale? Do you see it right where you live? The scriptures are very clear that selfishness has no place in a consciousness that is filled with Christ. Now, before the feast of Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, that he would leave this world and he would go to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the very, very end. During supper, the mistake had already been put into the heart of Judas to betray Jesus. And Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and he that had come forth from God was going back to God, got up from the supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. And then he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash the feet of the disciples, and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And so he came to Simon Peter first. And Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" And Jesus answered, "What I do, you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter." Jesus washed the feet of each of the disciples in turn, and when he had washed all of their feet and taken his garments and returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done? You call me teacher, you call me Lord, and you are right to do so. For I am. If then the Lord and the teacher washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." It is most likely that Jesus and his disciples had been hiding at Bethany during the first week before the crucifixion, and having traveled to Jerusalem from there, they would have been traveling on extremely dirty roads. So naturally, when they arrived, their feet were covered with dust from the road. Everyone in that culture faced the very same problem. Sandals did very little to keep dirt off the feet, and the roads were either a thick layer of dust or deep masses of mud. At the entrance of every Jewish home, there was a large pot of water to wash dirty feet. And normally, foot washing was the responsibility of the lowliest slave in the household. When guests came, the servant went to the door and washed the feet of those who wished to enter. Washing feet was probably the most lowly duty and the only duty that slaves performed for others. Even the disciples of the rabbis were not to wash the feet of their masters. That was uniquely and strictly a job of a slave. As Jesus and his disciples all arrived at the upper room, they found that there was no servant to wash their feet. Only days before, Jesus had said to the 12, "Whosoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave." If they had given their thoughts and their hearts to his teaching, one of the 12 would have washed the feet of the others, or perhaps they would have mutually shared the task. It could have been a beautiful expression of God in action, but it never occurred to them because of their selfishness. Now, I do not think for one minute that Jesus was advocating that all of us wash the feet of those who wish to come into our homes. He did not say, "Do the same thing that I have done." He is saying, "Behave in the same manner as I behaved." The example we are to follow is not the washing of feet. It is his humility. Do not minimize the lesson by trying to make the washing of the feet the important point of this scripture. Jesus' humility is the real lesson, and it is practical humility that governs every area of our life, every day of our life, and every experience of our life. The result of this kind of humility is always loving service, doing the menial, humiliating tasks for the glory of God. That is living in a consciousness of spirituality. That is living a Christ consciousness. Some people seem to think that the nearer you get to God, the further you must be from man. But that's not true. Actual proximity to God is to serve someone else. In terms of sacrificing to serve others, there is not a single thing that Jesus was not unwilling to do. So why should we be any different? We are not greater than the Lord. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Do you want to be blessed? Do you want to be fulfilled? Do you want to be happy? Then develop a servant's heart. We are his bondservants, and a servant not greater than our master. If Jesus can humble himself to be a servant and wash the feet of 12 undeserving sinners, we ought to be willing to be of service to anyone at any time. This is true love and true humility. As I said earlier, I don't think that Jesus was advocating that we go around washing feet, but he was telling us to be of service to one another in any way we can, regardless of what that service may look like. I'd like to share a little story that illustrates in the simplest ways how we can express love through the smallest act of kindness and service. You may have seen this story in the news a month or so ago, but I don't think it will hurt to have you hear it one more time. It is a letter that was sent from a little girl's mommy, addressed to the daddy in seat 16C. The letter starts out with the words, "Dear Daddy, I don't know your name, but Kate called you Daddy for the entire flight last week, and you kindly never corrected her." It goes on to say, "In fact, you didn't even flinch, as you probably would tell that she was confusing you with her own daddy, but instead of making a judgment regarding your level of safety for her. If she calls you daddy, then you better believe that she thinks you're all right. The letter goes on to say, I sat Kate, my 3-year-old daughter with autism, in the middle seat of the airplane, knowing full well that there would be a stranger sitting next to her for the duration of the flight. I had to make a quick decision, and I based it on her obsession with opening and closing the window shutters. I figured she might be less of a distraction if she sat in the middle seat. I watched the entire Temple basketball team board the plane, and I wondered if one of those giants would sit next to Kate. But they all moved toward the back. She would have liked that. She would have had some observations to make that I would have had to deal with, but she would have liked those players. I noticed many grandmotherly women board the plane, and I hoped for one of them to take the seat, but they all walked on by. For a fleeting moment, I thought that we might actually have the free seat beside us. And then you walked in, and you sat down with your briefcase, your important documents, and I had a vision of Kate pouring her water all over your multi-million-dollar contracts or your house deeds or whatever it was that you held. The moment you sat down, Kate started to rub your arm. Your jacket was soft, and she liked the feel of it. She smiled, you smiled at her, and she said, "Hi, Daddy, that's my mom." Then she had you. You could have shifted uncomfortably in your seat. You could have ignored her. You could have given me that smile that I despise because it means manage your child, please. But you did none of that. You encouraged Kate in conversation and you asked her questions about her turtles. She could never really answer your questions, but she was so enamored with you that she kept eye contact and joined attention on the items that you were asking about. I watched and I smiled. I made a few polite offers to distract her, but you would have none of it. Kate, upon noticing that you had an iPad, asked, "Is this Daddy's Padooters?" You responded, "This is my iPad. Would you like to see it?" "To me?" Kate replied, and I knew that she thought that you were offering it to her to keep. I said to Kate, "Look with your eyes, Kate. That is not yours." Kate remarked, "That's nice." Upon noticing that Kate had an iPad of her own, you said, "I like your computer too. It has a nice purple case." And Kate continued with the conversation by asking, "Daddy, you want to be a bad guy?" As she offered Shredder to you, and that, my friend, is very high praise. And you responded with, "Cool." The interaction went on, and you never once seemed annoyed. She gave you some moments of peace while she played with her Anna and Elsa dolls. It was kind of her to save you from having to play Barbies, but I bet that you wouldn't have minded a bit. I bet you have a little girl of your own. Now, not long before we landed, Kate had reached her limit. She screamed to have her seatbelt on. She screamed for me to open the plane door, and she cried, repeating, "The plane is closed, the plane is closed," over and over and over. You tried to redirect her attention to her toys, but she was way too far gone at that point. But the fact that you tried to help your little new friend made me emotional. In case you're wondering, she was fine the moment we stepped off the plane. Thank you for letting us go ahead of you. She was feeling overwhelmed, and escaping the plane and a big long hug was what she needed. So thank you. Thank you for not making me repeat those awful apologetic sentences that I so often say in public. Thank you for entertaining Kate so much that she had her most successful plane ride yet. And thank you for putting your papers away and playing turtles with our girl. This story has no mention of the washing of feet. But believe me, it is just as great an expression of love and quiet humility as Jesus would have offered. Can we begin now to make this lesson practical? Will you please join me in our closing meditation? Please take a moment to get comfortable in your chair. Rest your feet on the floor and place your hands comfortably in your lap or at your side. And just relax. Be still. Quiet your mind. Let go of all that is outside this peaceful, quiet sanctuary. Let go of all those worrisome thoughts, all of those ideas and activities that are swirling around in your head. If you are harboring any anger or resentment or any jealousy, let it go. And be still. Be still. And go within to the center of your being where our Father waits with unconditional love, unconditional peace. It is the Father's good pleasure to give those who love Him all that He has. And so it is that I have reaped abundantly the riches of the material world as I acknowledge, recognize, and dwell in His holy kingdom. The Father asks only that I love Him, myself, and my neighbor with that same abiding, unconditional love that He has for all of His children. The Father's love is expressed through His unlimited grace and His generosity, that I may receive His grace and generosity and let it pass through me to all who are in need is a blessing. Remember as you go forward this day that Jesus the Christ said to His disciples, "Whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be the first among you shall be your slave. It is God who is working within me both to will and do His work, and it is for His good pleasure. I am here to know and to serve the Father and to do His will. I am here to let the light of Christ shine through me to the glory of God, that others may see His good works and know Him. Let Thy will be done in me, Father. I am Your willing servant." Amen.